years ago, a friend of mine asked if I would go with his college group down to the Dominican Republic to do some mission work. And so I said, well, let me check the calendar. And as I looked at the calendar, I said, well, there is one potential conflict. On the day that you are flying down to the Dominican Republic, I am scheduled to finish up a conference in Gulf Shores, Alabama. And so we've got a little bit of a travel issue there. He said, that's no problem. If you don't mind coming down the day after we get there, that's fine with us. The first day, we're just going to get there, settle in, and so that will be perfectly fine. And so we got all the tickets together, and as the trip started getting closer, the organizer of the trip, I use that term very loosely, had given me very little information about what we were going to do, where we were going to stay, all of that type of stuff. And so the trip kept getting closer and closer and closer. I was asking for information. He said, I'm going to get it to you, going to get it to you. On the day that I left Golden Triangle Regional Airport, I still had no idea where we were staying, what we were doing, anything like that. But he promised me that he would get the information to me. So I got on the plane right out here, but I had about a four-hour layover in Atlanta, and I said, if I have not heard from him, I'm not getting on that plane. And so I was feverishly going back and forth with his wife, saying, have you heard from them? Where are we staying? What do I do when I get there? I don't know if they're coming to pick me up. How am I even going to find these people on this island? And so she said, I know. He told me he's got to get something to you. If you don't hear from me, then just come back to Columbus. I said, that's what I plan to do. You don't have to tell me that. That is exactly what I'm going to do. And so about an hour before we boarded, I got word from his wife. She copied and pasted something to me, some directions about how to get where this group would be. And so I copied and pasted that information onto a little message thing in my phone, and I had it. When I arrived in the Dominican Republic, I turned on my phone and began looking, and the directions were, take a taxi to the police station. And then from the police station, turn right, go three blocks and this and this and this, and then we are going to be at this school waiting for you. We're going to be working there at the school. We're not leaving until you get there, so come on and join us. Have any of you by any chance flown to another country? When you do so, because these countries know we Americans speak only English, they generally have some agents right there at the front who speak English who can help you. And so I turned on my telephone, walked over to one of the men there, and I said, can you get me a taxi to here? So he took my phone and began reading. He went, which police station? I said, what? He said, we have many police stations. Which one? I said, I don't know. And so he said, let me see what I can do. I know a missionary. And so he disappeared for a little while, called someone, came back to me, and said, all right, your friends are not working with my friend. They're not working with the guy that I know, but he does know of a group that is working at a particular school that I think might be the one. And so I'm going to get you a taxi, and he's going to take you there. And if that's not the place, then he's going to bring you back here. I said, are you sure? He said, yes, yes, no problem. And so he called a taxi driver up. They began speaking in Spanish, and I began walking out of the airport with this taxi driver. After I got out of the airport, I heard someone yelling, Señor! Señor! Now, I heard the voice yelling, but I just kept right on walking. I went a few more steps, Señor! Señor! Kept on going. After a few more seconds, someone grabbed me on the shoulder. Now, I don't like that. I got a lot of women stalking me. And I do not like people to be able to get through the security. And this person grabbed me from behind, and when I turned, he said, Señor, you, go with me. I said, no, I go with him. No, Señor, you go with me. He said, no, I go with him. He said, no. And by this time, this English-speaking agent inside, I guess he was sort of watching, and he realized something was going on. And so he came out to where we were, and they had a little triangle conversation in Spanish. And then finally, this man reached in his pocket, and he pulled out a little slip of paper. And on that paper was my name. Now, Pimentel was misspelled, but it did have Gary Pimentel or something like that. And he said, you go with me. And so this English-speaking agent said, here's what's happened. Your group realized that their directions were not going to get you to where they are. And so they sent this taxi driver back over here, and he is going to take you to that school where they are waiting for you. I said, are you sure? He said, yes. I know this guy. He will get you there. He'll bring you back if they're not there. And so we loaded up, went over to this school building, and I could look through the gate and see people that I recognized. And so I immediately... What a mighty God we serve. I was so excited to be able to see those people through there. And so I got off and grabbed my luggage, went into the school playground there, and that group came over and they said, Gary, we hope you weren't worried. You know, we realized those directions weren't good. And so the taxi driver was all right. And so everything was good. But that is when curiosity got the best of me. I asked those people, how did you describe me to that taxi driver? 178 or so of us got off that plane, just about all Americans. And I had not been 10 or 20 yards out of the airport before this man started yelling at me. How did you describe me to him? I said, what did you say? I mean, did you say, look, you get the best looking rascal on that plane. That is the one that you are looking for. And they said, we told him the man that you are looking for will be very little and very white. And as soon as he said, Señor, he knew based on that description that I was the person that he was looking for. It fit me well enough so that this man could pick me out of all of those people. Tonight, I want to talk about a description of the followers of Jesus Christ. One that is so accurate that the people who fit it can be picked out of a crowd to say, that person knows Jesus, that person follows Jesus, that person loves Jesus. And the description is straight from Jesus himself. Would you open your Bibles, please, to John chapter 15. Jesus said these words to his disciples the night before he was crucified. In fact, beginning in John chapter 13, everything from that point going forward until late in John chapter 20 happens really in just one night. And so Jesus already, by the time we get to these verses, had washed the disciples' feet to show them what type of servant lifestyle he wanted them to live. They had observed the Lord's Supper together for the very first time. Now Jesus and the disciples had left that upper room where those events had happened, and they were walking on their way to the Garden of Gethsemane. Just about every commentary that I've read over the past couple of weeks says that almost certainly on the pathway, Jesus stopped and pointed to a grapevine and said, you see this analogy here, I am the vine, you are the branches. Well then, the section that I want us to look at together tonight is in verse 9, or at least it begins in verse 9. Jesus said, as the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. Remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you these things so that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. This is my command. Love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down his life for his friends. And you are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants anymore, because a servant doesn't know what his master is doing. Instead, I have called you friends, because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from my Father. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and produce fruit, and that your fruit should remain, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he will give you. This is what I command you. Love one another. Jesus, in these verses, gave a description of the people who follow him. What did he say describes us? First, people who really follow Jesus obey him. They do what he says in verse 10. He said, "If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love." Jesus said, "I haven't been here on my own agenda. I haven't just awakened in the morning and started doing whatever I wanted to do. I have tuned into my Heavenly Father, and all throughout the day, I have been obedient to what he told me to do. And so now I am telling you to follow that example. You obey the commandments that I have given to you. I haven't just shown you an example by how I live. I've given you specific ways that I want you to live. And so obey those commandments." And then down in verse 14, Jesus was even more explicit. He said, "You are my friends, you are my followers, you're the people who are devoted to me, if you do what I command you." Jesus said obedience is a very important part of being known as a follower of Jesus Christ. And sometimes we forget that. Sometimes we allow compromises and things that we know to be wrong to come into our lives and have a place in our lives. And Jesus said, "No, the people who really are following me, they're the ones who, as best as they are able, are obedient to me. They do what I say, and their lives reflect that sort of commitment." When I first began traveling and speaking, I served, or I had just finished serving at Mount Vernon, and this type of work takes a little bit of time to get some traction going. And it would just be like starting a new business. You would take a while to get some things filled up. And so a friend of mine, Marty Williams, was the student minister at First Baptist Church, Covington, Louisiana. And Marty said, called me and said, "Gary, I know that doing this type of work is very difficult, especially in the beginning. And so any Sunday night that you are in South Mississippi, South Louisiana, South Alabama, and you want to drive to speak in our youth service, you have a standing invitation. You can come speak as many times as you want to. Any time that you need a place to speak and you are close, you can come here." And so I was at First Baptist Church, Covington, Louisiana, a number of times in the early months that I began traveling and speaking. On one evening, Marty had all of his group together. That's a huge youth group. 300 or so teenagers would get together every Sunday night. And on this night, Marty said, "Hey, Gary is here to speak tonight." Of course, the crowd erupted in a thunderous applause. And then he said, "Before we get started, I want to do a little game with you, a little activity with you. It's called word association." Marty said, "In word association, someone says a word, and then you say the very first word that comes to your mind. Does everybody understand?" And everybody said, "Yes, yes, we understand." Now, Marty said, "We're going to do a little bit differently, though, because instead of saying words, I am going to say a name. And then I want you to say the very first word that comes to your mind when I say that name. Does everybody have it?" "Yes, yes." And so Marty said, "All right, let's get somebody from over here in this section. Stand up." He pointed to someone, and that person stood up. And keep in mind, this has been a long time ago, so the names are going to be a little bit different. Marty said, "All right, what comes to your mind when I say the name George W. Bush? President, Texas, Republican, big ear, something like that." "Great, great, okay, sit down." He said, "Let's get somebody over here in this section. Stand up. What's the first word that comes to your mind when I say the name Shaquille O'Neal?" And the boy said, "LSU, Lakers, basketball, something like that." "Great, great, sit down. Let's get somebody from here in the middle. What's the first word that comes to your mind when I say the name Britney Spears? Fake, no talent, can't sing." "Great, great, all right, sit down." And so all of these different things were going on. And then Marty pointed at a girl named Emily. I knew Emily very well, and here's why. Every place that I go speak, I am a visitor. And I always, when I come in, speak to people and talk to people. And I try to at least, you know, establish some sort of rapport. But let me tell you something different about Emily. Emily came to me to speak. Instead of saying, well, he's the visitor, let's just all stand here awkwardly and look at him. Emily came over the very first night, introduced herself to me, told me that they generally would eat supper. And so on this particular night, like many other nights, when I would come in those double glass doors, she would say, Gary, come sit with us. And so I would make my way over there and sit down. And so Marty pointed at Emily and said, Emily, all right, now you know what we're doing here. I'm going to say the name of a person, and then I want you to say the very first word that comes to your mind. Do you understand? Yes, I do. And then Marty said the name of Emily's dad. Without pausing, immediately, I am talking in a split second. When Marty said the name of Emily's dad to her, she said, Jesus. And Marty said, why did you say that? She said, I mean, my dad lives more like Jesus than anybody I know. I didn't know that you were going to call on me. I didn't know that you were going to say my dad's name even once you called on me. It was just the first thing that came to my mind. That's somebody who obeys Jesus. What if I were to get a little iPad or a clipboard or something like that, and I were to go somewhere here in Columbus that is a high traffic area, lots of people, Dollar General or something like that. And what if I were to have that iPad or clipboard, and on it were the names of every single person in this room? And I were to ask people, I'm doing a little activity here. Would you say the very first word that comes to your mind when I say this name? When I got to your name, what would the people who know you say? Let's be honest. There might be some people here who would say, oh, I would not want to know what people would say about me. I would not want to know what the first word that would come out of people's minds, mouths. But I think a number of us would say, well, they might say he's a nice guy or thoughtful or something like that. Is there a single person in your circle of relationships that when asked to say the very first word that came to his or her mind, when your name was mentioned, is there anybody who would say Jesus? I don't know that that's the case for me. But that is how we are to live. One who obeys Jesus. Regardless of what other people might think about it, regardless of whether other people or not are doing it, regardless of whether or not we have a clean image in the church, and so therefore we can slip our little underhanded ways in. Jesus said, the people who really follow me, the people that are devoted to me, the people that I count as my friends, they're the ones who obey me. They're the ones who do what I say, regardless of how inconvenient doing so might be. Well, then he moved on to another topic. Jesus said, there's another way that I want to describe the people who follow me. And he mentions this one more than any of the others. He said, they really love other people. They really care about others. In verse 9, Jesus said, as the Father has loved me, I have also loved you, so remain in my love. He said, you are receiving a steady supply of love. You're not having to hunger for it. You've got it already. And then down in verse 12, he came back to that idea. This is my command, love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down his life for his friends. He said, you're going to see this happen. If you ever have wondered, I don't think that you have, but if you ever have wondered whether or not that I love you, Jesus told the disciples, tomorrow you are going to see me hanging on a cross as a demonstration of how deeply I love you and the great lengths that I will go to keep a relationship with you. And then one more time, just to be sure that they did not forget it, the last verse of the passage in verse 17 is, this is what I command you. Love one another. Jesus said, do you really want to know who the people are that follow me? They're the ones who care about each other. They're the ones who never would whisper behind their backs. They're the ones who never would undermine them. They're the people who always go the second mile. They're the people who are determined to be loyal to those people. They're the ones who are willing to serve even when no one else knows what they are doing. Jesus said, these are the people that belong to me. I don't know what state line is like. I don't know what the churches where you go are like. But I can tell you about the church where I grew up in West Point. When we had, in some churches, you can tell when it's going to be a really good business meeting. When people who have not been to church in a long time show back up. And you see them out in the park, like, man, I hadn't seen you. When? We've been living in Indiana, but we heard what we were voting on tonight, so we came back to express our opinions. But at our church, you never knew what to expect, because any business meeting could turn into a battle royal. And so on the nights that we had business meetings, I always wore my little football uniform to church. With a helmet, because you never knew when a hymnal or a small child would be thrown to the front in anger. And if I forgot to wear my football uniform, I would just crawl down in the little Lord's Supper cup holder. And then when it was over, I'd say, is it safe? And then I would make my way out. Some of the meanest, most hateful, most evil, most ungodly words I've ever heard spoken have been said by people who claim to be followers of Christ. There are a lot of people in churches who are devious and backstabbers. Jesus said, that doesn't fit the people that follow me. The people that follow me love each other. Not saying that it's easy to do, I am just saying that's what Jesus taught us. And so he said, the people who are my followers, if you're trying to pick them out on a crowd, you can look for the people who are obedient to me. You can look for the people who really care about others. But then in verse 12, he came to another thought. There's more in this passage, but this is the only other one we're going to look at tonight. In verse 11, Jesus said, I have told you these things so that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. Jesus said, another trait of the people who really follow me are those who are able to be joyful in difficult circumstances. Being joyful when everything is going your way, that's not hard. When school day pictures roll around and your face hasn't broken out, easy to be joyful then. When your football team is winning, easy to be joyful then. But Jesus did not say, the people who are my followers, they're the ones who are really celebrating when things are going well. Because this sentence that Jesus made to the disciples was spoken the night before he was crucified. And Jesus was aware of what was coming. Please understand, Jesus was not caught off guard. He didn't didn't go out to the Garden of Gethsemane and then be surprised by the soldiers coming to arrest him. You remember back in John chapter 13, Jesus told the disciple, that hour is here. I've been telling you about it for 3 years. I've been telling you that the Son of Man is going to be handed over and delivered to the chief priests and scribes and Pharisees, and they're going to crucify me. That hour is here. In fact, one of you sitting around this table with me is an instrumental part of that. One of you is going to betray me. Jesus knew what was about to happen. And yet, despite the awareness that the hour in which he would cry, my God, why have you forsaken me, was near. Despite the fact that he knew nails would be driven into his hands and feet, a crown of thorns pressed on his head, a spear thrust into his side, despite the fact that he knew that people would mock him and ridicule him in the hours that he hung on a cross, even in the darkness of that hour, he said, men, do you see the joy that I have right now? That's the joy that I always want you to have. I want you to have this type of joy that I am experiencing right now. And if you do, Jesus said, then your joy will be full or complete. Being a joyful person when everything is going the way that you want, that is not at all difficult. We all can do that. But Jesus talked about a joy that persists and endures even when the bottom has fallen out. Do you know how powerful that is? When someone observes the life circumstances through which you are walking and they see you, you're not denying the reality, you're not pretending that it doesn't exist, you're not living in some fantasy world, but they watch you continue to walk in joy and they say, I just don't know how he does it. If I were in those circumstances, I would be crushed underneath that. How does he? It's Jesus. Jesus said, that sort of joy matches the people who follow me. I don't know what the holidays are like for you. When the Christmas and Thanksgiving and other holiday celebrations are just my immediate family, I really, really like those. But I have some extended family that I don't really care to be around very much. Now, I know that makes me a terrible person. Everybody here loves every cousin you have. But I've got some people on down the line that are not pleasant company. And when we gather at my mom's house in West Point, if I know that those people from down the line are coming, sometimes it's really difficult. I've got one aunt who is the most negative, critical, spiteful person on this planet. Now quit elbowing the person next to you. Say, I didn't know you were Gary's aunt. It's not anybody here. And my mom always, if she is coming, my mom always saves her for last. She won't tell me until right before the holidays, so I can't fake a heart attack or something like that. And so she will say, well, your aunt so-and-so is coming. God, what have I done this year? Have I not been good? Lord, why is she? Lord, she's getting on up there in years. Don't you think she would just enjoy spending the holidays with you? Just take her on, Lord, and then we won't have to do it anymore. And when she comes, we will all be sitting around the table, celebrating, enjoying, talking with each other. But when she comes in the room, she will have a cloud of gloom over her head and will not be satisfied until it has spread to every other person in the room. So that we sit there and say, well, I guess it has been a pretty terrible year. When there's every reason in the world to celebrate, she can find a way to gripe and complain. What Jesus says about the people who truly follow him is that exactly the opposite is true. When there's every reason in the world to grumble, complain, gripe, we find a way to be joyful. Jesus said, those are the people who follow me. They're the ones that you can pick out of a crowd. What if someone flew into Columbus? What if someone from a different part of the world, a different culture, flew here to Columbus and said, I know in America you have many Christians, but we do not have any in my village. In the village where I live, there are no people who are Christians, and so I have come looking for some. I have come looking for people who are followers of Christ. And what if the description on a little piece of paper that that person had was this passage? What if that person were looking for people who fit this description? People who obey Jesus, people who really care about each other, people who are joyful in different difficult circumstances. What if they were looking, saying, I do not know any Christians, but I am looking for one, and I am looking at this paper. Would they look at you and go, Señor, Señor, you, this is you. That's how we ought to want to live. So that people, when they know the descriptions of the followers of Christ, they can pick us out in a crowd because they see what they're looking for. I'm going to ask the musicians to come and lead us in a closing song of commitment tonight. Perhaps there are people who are here who have not yet begun a relationship with Jesus Christ. Just last night, I finished up a youth event. Three teenage boys gave their lives to Jesus Christ. They are three brand new people going to heaven. And maybe tonight someone would join them. Maybe there's a man, a woman, a college-age student, a teenager, a boy or a girl, and you never have said yes to Jesus. This Jesus about whom we spoke, in just a matter of hours following this passage, would die on a cross to provide the way of salvation and swing the gates of heaven wide open to anyone who would say yes to Him. And maybe tonight you would say yes to Him. I recognize that the majority of us in this room already are followers of Jesus Christ. And perhaps God has been nudging you tonight to say, you really don't fit this description. You do fit the description of a person who goes to church. You do fit the description of a nice moral person. But you really don't fit the description of a devoted follower of mine. And maybe He's drawing you into a more devoted, a more passionate, a more faithful walk with Him. In whatever way God's Spirit speaks to you, I hope that you'll be obedient to that. Brother Robert's going to be standing here at the front to talk and pray with people who might need further counsel. Let's all stand together. They're going to lead us as we sing together. You listen to what God's Spirit says to you and then be obedient.